Hey everybody, and welcome to the EV Cafe Takeaway Podcast. It is another wonderful day here in the EV Cafe, and I'm Paul Kirby, and I'll be joined by various members of the EV Cafe crew, and today, the wonderful Sam Clark. We have got a guest for you today, as you can already see. We get to speak to amazing innovators, collaborators, and I always get this bit wrong because I wrote it down and then pioneers, innovators, and collaborators. That's what I should say. But there we go. And today, no exception, we are joined by the wonderful Martin Chariots of Fire. And Martin was officially the fastest man in rugby league back in the day. He has scored over 500 tries and actually the most tries that anybody has ever scored as an Englishman. And number three in the world, I think I'm right in saying, Martin. He's been on Strictly. He's a Sky Sports commentator. He was a model for 2 hours and is now a brand ambassador for Connected Curb, which is the only reason we've got him on today, because obviously, you know, that's the core. Martin, welcome.
Thanks for having me, guys. Yes, it's great to meet you guys. Obviously, I've commented on a few of your posts on LinkedIn. And Paul, obviously, I met you recently at the EV Summit before yes. Christmas. So, yes, it's great to be on the EV Cafe. I feel like I've arrived.
It is worth saying, Martin, that you know, you are officially LinkedIn famous. I think you might have been famous just before that too, but yes. You're definitely LinkedIn famous now.
Yeah, definitely. When I turned up at the EV Summit, and the guy at reception said to me, "I recognise you from somewhere." And obviously, you know, I go around and expect people to say, "Oh, you know, I saw you on Strictly or Question of Sport, or I remember you from your rugby career." He went, "Yes, I've seen a few of your posts on LinkedIn." So that's when I officially became LinkedIn famous. It's a thing. It is actually a thing.
Yeah, it's our only thing.
Yeah, it really is. Oh, dear. But Martin, I mean, we're thrilled to have you join us today. And obviously, there's a lot to talk about in your backstory. But what is it that got you to this sort of world of sustainability and charging and doing that sort of thing? How did you get to this little bit here? We'll talk about your history in a bit, but yeah. What inspired you and what are you doing now?
What inspired me to get into sustainability? A couple of things, really. I'd say getting older, having kids, you know, having that sort of different mindset and realization, you know, once you reach the age of 50, you know, you want to be healthy. You know, I'm a parent who started quite late. So as anyone who's a parent and starts quite late, you know, I had my first kid at 40, you start thinking, well, when I'm 50, the kids are going to be 10. When I'm 60, they're going to be 20. So you start thinking about, you know, your longevity and your health. Also, you know, someone just randomly gave me a lift in an i3 back in 2016. And anyone who's been in the EV will know it's a bit of an experience, you know, instant torque, acceleration, the quietness of it. It was actually another rugby player called Andy Gumbersall, part of England's 2003 World Cup winning squad. I also appeared on a reality TV show in 2019 called Hunted, where I weighed 105 kg and I was with another rugby player, Gavin Henson. And anyone who's seen that show knows that you have to be light on your toes and avoid the hunters. And I ended up as a meme trying to get over a fence. And so, you know, I started to think about sustainability, my health and all these sort of things. And it all sort of came into one. I bought an EV. My wife had an accident in her car. So I thought that's an opportunity. I always think in life, you know, you have opportunities, then you're curious about those opportunities and it can lead to an emotional connection. So I bought an EV for my wife. I kept my gas guzzling Range Rover and found I was gravitating towards my wife's car. She started ringing me to say, "Can you bring my car back?" Because we had this rule that whoever got in the Range Rover when it was, you know, low on fuel had to fill it up. So it was £100 to fill up the Range Rover, where was the i3? Fortunately, I had a driveway so I could charge my EV overnight. So, you know, most journeys you do, you know, I don't say most people do over 20, 40 miles a day. So, you know, an EV was great for all of my daily driving, except for that odd occasion, you know, I went on a long journey when I would then get in the Range Rover. So when my wife called me to, you know, say, can you bring my car back for the last time? I thought, I've got to get myself one. So then I thought, you know, I started looking around. I saw that, you know, these things called Teslas, these incredible things. I think I'd been on a driving experience day where I drove a McLaren. And then I got into this Tesla Model S. And then I thought, wow, this is just like driving a McLaren. I thought, what? I just literally blew my mind driving these things. And then I saw the price of it and thought, well, I don't know if I could justify that. So then I said, can you put me in a Tesla, which I can afford? So I got a 2014 Model S, which had free supercharging. So it still was quite pricey. I think at 47K for a used car, I thought, wow. But then I did the sums and I thought if I sold my Range Rover, you know, I'd had that for 10 years. I thought, so I could get about 10K for that. It's about 30K. And I thought, well, if I buy this car and keep it for 9 years, then, you know, it's going to literally pay for itself, you know, with the software updates and, you know, the road tax and no congestion charge, no ULEZ charge and all those sort of things. I thought, God, it's a cost saving. So, you know, I really was, it was changing, getting into it was changing how I thought, you know, about getting around. You know, I found that I was walking more, you know, as I say, going back to the health thing and overweight and being a parent. So I think it was all these things coming together in my head and in my gut was just saying, this is the way to go. And just at this time, because you're thinking about this, you're now open to opportunities because I've had several business opportunities to get involved with, whether that's in FX trading, whether that's in doing lots of other things, you know, the dinners and the other things that sportsmen get asked to attend. But I've always said no to because I didn't know nothing about them. I didn't know nothing about EV, but I had a passion for it because I was into it. And I thought, God, you know, thinking about the planet and my kids and, you know, at that time, I had a statue that went up at Wembley, and that also got me thinking about differently. Because I'm thinking that statue is going to be there long after at Wembley, long after I'm gone. And you know, I started thinking about my great 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 grandkids might take my their kids to that statue and go, that is my great grandfather. What are they going to say about me? And I know it's just like, as I'm speaking now, it's blowing my mind again, because these are the thoughts that I was having. And at that particular time, a good friend of mine, a guy called Richard Clements, who's one of the founders at Connected Curb, came to me at a time and said to me, Martin, you know, I think we had a conversation a few weeks ago, just at a party. I think it might have been his one of his kids' christenings, because I'm the godfather to one of his sons. We're good, really good friends. And he said to me, Martin, you know, I remember having that conversation, you talking so passionately about this car that you'd bought and how you'd gone to France in it, and you know, you only had to pay for, you know, the ferry, and how the experience and how you communicated that to me. He said, I'm starting this company and I want you to come work for me. And I said, well, what am I going to do? I don't know anything about electric vehicles. You know, I didn't know a 7 kilowatt from a 22 kilowatt DC from AC charging and the world of EV. You know, there's so much jargon involved in it. It is literally like, you know, speaking another language, you know, and that sometimes mm-hmm. people are fearful of that, don't want to get involved. He said, no, I love your passion, I love your energy, you know, you've experienced range anxiety, you can communicate that to people. You know, I used to say to people in the early meetings, I said, you don't have flat tire anxiety, do I? I'm of a generation that I've still never changed a tire in my life. I don't drive my car around thinking, what happens if I have a flat tire? You know, I know what happens if I have a flat tire. I call someone and they come up and change the tire for me. So if you run out of battery, you know, in an EV, you call somebody, they tow you to a charger, or they'll maybe have a newfangled thing which they can charge you there on the spot. But it's just communicating real world things, communicating with people in the real world. And that can be counselors, that can be people with big budgets at companies, because we're all human beings. And that's what I bring, you know, I look in all the answers that we want to find in EV, in life, in anything, is within us, you know, all that we've achieved before, yeah, and go back to even passing your driving test, you know, and knowing that whatever we're worrying about today, we won't be worrying about that in 10 years' time, you know, when the ICE car ban, you know, the new sale of you know, petrol, and I have to say, stop saying things like ICE car ban, because people are like, what does that mean? Internal combustion engines, even that now seems normal to me, to say ICE car ban, that sounds normal. Mm. But to the man in the street, that, you know, you have to mm-hmm. break that down, and you have to remember, because sometimes I have to remember where I was and stop being, you know, part of the industry, just preaching to the choir, and, you know, talk as I, you know, to myself when I was, you know, back in 2018, when I just joined Connected Care, when I was in meetings and I was thinking, what do I know? What can I bring to this industry? What is? And I think to myself, I bring my uniqueness. I bring my experience. You know, I've experienced those emotions. I have a driveway. I know the benefits of what that is. When I bought my house with a driveway, I bought it because anyone who knows me from my days playing at Widnes and Wigan, I always wanted a house with a driveway because I loved playing basketball. And that's why I bought a house. To have a driveway in London is no mean feat. But I bought it to have to play basketball. And I'm looking at my basketball hoop outside the house now. But I'm also looking at my Tesla charging on the drive. So that's something else, you know, it's real estate. If you have enough money, if you have enough space and you know enough people, you can solve most problems in life. And that's what we're bringing. It's the mindset, changing your mindset. I now have a sustainability mindset for my body. I've been up this morning at 5:30. I had a cold shower. I went on a run. I did my weights. I did my exercise because I'm thinking about doing the best for myself, because this is my planet, trying to keep this in shape and healthy for as long as possible. And that's what we're doing with the planet. But having said that, most people don't have that mindset. I think most people are going to get into EVs because they're the new shiny thing on the block. And I think that's when it's going to go mass market. You know, I was having a conversation the other day when I was speaking about flat screen TVs. I have more flat screen TVs in my house than there are people living in the house. I've even got a flat screen TV in my garden because of what happened in lockdown. Okay. But in the 90s, I used to have just a big, massive TV. And I don't remember having conversations about the transition to flat screen TVs. They just happened. It just happened, you know. But I think there's the difference now is that EVs, we're trying to accelerate that transition. The transition to EVs is going to happen now, you know. It's just now about, oh, we're trying to get it done by 2030 so we can, you know, be in sync with the government's, you know, ban on fossil fuel cars. Or can we get to the, you know, the targets that we're setting for climate in net zero? Are we trying to save as many people's lives? I know that 40,000 people die a year from, you know, air pollution. Are we trying to, you know, keep clean air in local communities? You know, so that's what, it's just the targets, you know, of what we're trying to achieve. But it's going to happen, but we're trying to accelerate. That's the word, I think it is. We're trying to accelerate and we're trying to get the infrastructure out there, you know. Flat screen TVs, you know, we've got the Wi-Fi, we've got the plug sockets already there. So it's there. We're just trying to get the plug sockets and that, you know, Wi-Fi connection so we can have the IoT so we can do stuff. That's what I like about Connected Care. It doesn't see EV as a problem. It sees EV as an opportunity to make smart streets, as an opportunity to solve problems that we don't even know that exist yet. There are going to be problems that are going to come in 2035, in 2047, because it's coming. You know, that's one thing you know about being successful at sport. I know that when I was an 11-year-old trying to be successful at rugby, I wasn't thinking about my dislocated shoulder in 1993, which was probably the greatest thing that happened to me, which then got me to play at Wembley with so much passion in 1994 and so much to prove that I scored one of the most amazing tries that resulted in a statue in 2015. It blows my mind when I put these timelines together and I'm thinking what timelines are going to be in the future. I have to stop talking because I'm blowing my own mind. I'm just feeling the emotions. I can feel it boiling up. I can feel all the things I felt that got me to places. And when you create something, you know, and I know that's what Connected Curb are doing. You know, I was at Connected Curb when we famously had more awards than chargers. I think we had an award from the Lord Mayor of London for innovation in EV, which led to our first deployment. So when I joined Connected Curb, you know, I joined on the same day as Chris Pateman-Jones, as one of the most greatest people that I've ever met in my life, along with Richard Clements, who got me into the industry. People who don't know, Chris Pateman-Jones is the CEO at Connected Curb. And, you know, he got me, I think the first book he gave me to read is What They Don't Teach You. About at Harvard Business School, you know, it just taught you about life and business and how I can bring, you know, my uniqueness to this. It's that being a human being, what people forget sometimes in business and, you know, in EV and everything, we're all human beings, you know, and human beings are one of two people. And if I can say to anyone, take this away from you, when you're having a conversation, listen, and you'll find out whether that person you are talking to is a glass half full person or a glass half empty person. It's so, and that's how you know what type of person you are. Do you look at the solutions or do you look at the problems? Are you going to focus on the one journey that you can't do to Scotland a year, or the four journeys that you can't do a year, or everything you can do in an EV? You know what I mean? You
think so, Martin? Let me ask you a question so you can have a chance to take a breath.
Yes. That is my downside. I'm too passionate. Yeah. I'm too passionate about it.
That's good. I mean, look, you're in the right place, right? I mean, first and foremost, I can see why they thought you would be a good brand ambassador. I think that's abundantly clear. And certainly, you know, what Paul and I are trying to do and the other three guys amongst our group is try to preach to beyond the church walls, as you put, which we use the same expression all the time because we are hugely passionate about this. I've been driving EVs for 20 years, Paul, 10 plus at least, I think.
On and off.
We've been doing this a lot. Yeah, we've been doing this a long, long time. The question I had for you is my driveway is very similar to yours, i3 and a Model Y, Tesla Model Y. I still reach for those i3 keys, or I did until recently reach for those instead when I'm not hopping about town. Do you still do the same thing, even though you're now not a Range Rover i3, you're a Tesla i3? Do you still go for those keys when you want to nip around town?
No, because I'm now a double Tesla family because of my wife. Okay. Obviously, and again, this is all part of the learnings. I said, when you've lived through this, that's why I can sit in a room with someone, you know, of the brains of Chris Pateman-Jones or a local councillor or, you know, the Lord Mayor of London, because I've lived it. And I know it. And I, you know, I've had a wife on the phone crying because she's got 2% battery and she's trying to go 10 miles beyond the range of her i3. That's why my wife now has a Model 3, just because of she wanted to, you know, we've got friends who, you know, have now moved to Cornwall. She wants to drive to Cornwall. She can't drive to Cornwall in an i3. It's just not doable because of the infrastructure is not there. And I don't want to be, you know, I have to be careful sometimes when I speak because, you know, sometimes I've got my hat on. Sometimes I've got the industry hat on. Sometimes I've got net zero hat on. Sometimes I've got Connected Curb hats on. So it is a thing to navigate, but I always try to be authentic and I'll always try to be honest. And, you know, that's why I got into this business, because infrastructure is the key. It is the key to it, because, you know, on that one day that you do forget to, charge my car, I'm human. You know, I make errors. I am going on a long journey. And for some reason, the kids have got me confused about something. My attention is taken away to something else. I forget to charge my car. I'm getting in the morning. I've got to go to Birmingham. What do I do? That's when you do need lots of different solutions, lots of arterial charges. If I had an i3, I would still be driving it now, but my driveway is not big enough for three cars. And you know, so then I did share on the love that, you know, I bought that i3, I think in 2017 for about, you know, I think it just came off a lease. I bought it for 15K, sold it for 8K 4 years later. And I just, you know, I'm sharing the love. I'm giving this well-kept good vehicle, which is going to go on. And I'm giving it to someone else. It's about sharing. It's, you know, in life, that's something else I learned. If life is about adding value to other people's lives, it's not about doing for yourself. The reason why you are successful is because, you know, like in anything, it's because you add value to other people's lives. You know, why does people like Messi and Ronaldo, why are they the greatest? Because they're adding stuff to other people's lives. You know what I mean? You're thinking about something else. In Connected Curb, I realize that I'm, you know, I'm not only helping people because I'm putting a solution into local authorities that's going to help them. I speak to councillors and I say, connected curbs kit is going to be in the ground for 20 years. They're giving you peace of mind in EV charging for 20 years. We know what technology is like. It's what, 3 to 5 years, and then you change it. You know, my iPhone, before the warranty ran out, there was a new iPhone. That's how fast technology advances. So if you can have something which is modular and in the ground for 20 years and has an efficiency rating of 98%, and that's going to be guaranteed, it's like, you know, I'm selling things to other people, but I'm speaking it from a point of what I know with my body, with my health. Now, I've got an electric car and I use my car still less than I used my gas guzzler because I'm in that sustainability mindset, knowing that, I'm thinking for the planet, think about myself. So it makes sense now to hop on a Lime bike, and I call them my... cheap Ubers, because if I'm going to do I'm going out in the evening and it's electrified now, these Lime bikes, so you're not going to, you know, as long as it's not raining, it's not wet, you know, again, half glass full, you're looking for ways you can do things rather than thinking about the one time they'll go, what about if it's raining? I'm thinking, okay, on that one time it's raining, I might actually use an Uber, but on the days that it's sunny all throughout the summer, and it's electric, so I'm not going to be sweaty when I get there, if it's a 2 mile journey, I can now use a Lime bike rather than use my car. You know, you're thinking of ways. It's just getting you in that sustainability mindset. It's a mindset of which you're changing because you think differently now. So if you think differently, you do differently. If you do differently, you get different. And that's a basic mindset which sportsmen have to be into, because you're always trying to strive to get better, improve. They talk about the correlations between business and sport. And it is true, because you are going there to achieve something, you know, in Connected Curb, you know, and I know that you're not with Vanarama now, Paul, but, you know, you're trying to spread, to get, you know, White Van Man to change and convert.
Absolutely.
But some of them are going to tell you, and I'm sure you've come across it, they're all going to tell you about all the journeys, why they can't do it, but they don't tell you about, you know, they don't focus on the things that they can do. Even if it means using your gas guzzler less, that's the first step in a sustainability mindset. I will use my polluting vehicle less because I know it's going to be better for everyone living around me because the air will be cleaner. Just that alone.
Exactly.
You've got one. Yeah. You've got one tip. And then the next day you're going to think, what else can I do? What else can I do? Mm-hmm. And while you're walking or you're doing other stuff, you're making yourself healthier. You're living longer. And then it's like sport. When I started playing rugby, I didn't play rugby because I thought, I'm going to become an MBE. I'm going to have a statue outside Wembley. I'm going to make a lot of money. I'm going to do this. I'm going to do that. You don't. You got it for the right reasons. I love the sport. I remember my first ever rugby game. I remember the night before my first ever rugby game, because my teacher, a guy called Doc Thornbury, who passed away recently, and I remember doing a story, I think it was the Daily Telegraph, about how I remember this guy changed my life, because he was the first step. He said to me, Martin, he was an English teacher, you know, at boarding schools, you know, it's not always a rugby, you know, someone who's a professional rugby person, it's a teacher who then has a passion for rugby, and he was a great communicator, and he says to me, Martin, I want you to go tonight and pray to the gods of rugby that you play well tomorrow. And that really resonated with me, and I went there, and I didn't realize at the time, because now we look back, don't we, I think to myself, what he did was he internalized it for me. He got me to internalize it. And that's when I went from being a kid who plays rugby to being a rugby player. It's like you internalize it. And I look inside and I was visualizing, you know, and psychologists have all these things about visualization now and things. And it just went into the core of me. And I saw myself on that pitch and I was visualizing I was going to do well. And it so well happened that I did well. And that's where, you know, I thought to myself, you know, I did other sports, cricket, you know, I was a professional cricketer for 5 minutes playing at Essex. I did fencing, lots of other sports. But, you know, I always remember back to that day. And I went on and what I achieved. And I think to myself, and that's what I'm bringing to EV. I'm thinking that I always remember the day I walked into the office at Connected Curb. You know, I got my my password to the internet. I got my email address. I sat there, you know, and I had this book, and I was thinking and realizing that business is about emotions And I suddenly thought to myself, God, you know what? I walk out in the street all the time and people come up to me and go, are you Martin of Fire? And I go, yeah. And I thought, suddenly thought, that's what I've got. I've got that, which no one else have got. So, you know, that they could be, those people said it to me, they could be at sporting clubs. And I know that every sporting club has a relationship with its local authority. And I thought, that's gold. That is rapport building, you know? And so if I'm putting that and then people recognize that, and I'm thinking, well, if I've got an authentic message to sell, you know, when you go out anywhere now, people always say, you know, oh, I remember you when you used to play. What are you doing now? And I'll say, well, this is what I'm doing now. And I start and I speak and I connect. And if they're on the same level, I think, oh, EV charging is going to go everywhere. You know, it's going to go everywhere. It's been mandated. It's almost like being in the mafia. The mafia has said, you're going to have to switch to electric vehicles for the good of the planet. You know, no one else apart from governments and local authorities can say that. You know, even if I think it's a great idea, I can't say, treat your kids well. You know, you have to treat everyone on this planet fairly. That's a good thing. But I don't have the power to go and say that. You know, I'm just me. So it's knowing that, understanding, bringing that, talking to people. If I can get someone just to think, if I can, you know, when I speak to people and I just get them and they go, oh, I didn't think of that. You know, that's when you've affected them in the gut. And if you, and that's what it is. It's about anything in life is about communication with people. It's about getting them to try and think differently, sharing your journey, sharing how far you've come, sharing how far we've got to go. Letting them know that, you know, you said earlier on, I am the third highest try score of all time. I wanted to be number one, right? Trust me, when I was out on that field, when people said to me, you know, and I think of negative experiences when people would say things based on, you know, in the 80s and 90s, when we didn't live in the society that we lived in today, would say things about my color or anything. I was always about, I'm going to do it. I always think, even if people give you negativity, turn it into positivity. Even if people are glass half, you know, half empty, try and turn them the other way. Even if they give you negativity, try and give them positivity. Give them a thought that may not affect them in that moment, but something may happen to them in 3 years' time, and they'll remember BTU on that day, and that's how you connect the dots. And it's almost like, I feel like I'm trying to be a Jedi sometimes. It's like teaching the Force. How do you communicate the Force? You don't know that. You just be your authentic self. Help that it has an effect on people, because it's not so much changing people's mind. It's just being you, sending out that energy, that message in a easily digestible way, and hoping and praying that you connect with people. And it's almost like religion, isn't it? You know, Jesus started with 12. It goes to, you know, how many, and they... Yeah. You know, then gone, because we are all brand ambassadors. As you say, I bow to you guys. You've been driving EVs a lot longer than I have. You know what I mean? And, you know, it's now, without you doing what you did, I wouldn't be here in an EV spreading the world. So it's almost like, and as you well know, everyone who drives an EV is an ambassador, isn't it? We're all ambassadors. Yeah. We go to a charge point. What happens? At a charge point, someone goes up to you, oh, how much does that cost? Or what's the range on that? How, you know, what's your experience been on that? What's that? You know what I mean? Yeah. And as we all know, most of the experiences are going to be positive. Obviously, there's going to be that one negative experience. And as again, guessing, you know, you can think of the one negative experience, or which they put in the press, or you see this, oh, I did this, and I had to hand it back. But we all know that most experiences with an EV are going to be positive. Yeah. It's a no-brainer. Yeah. So that's why I say eventually it's going to spread. I don't remember talking about flat-screen TVs, maybe because I was involved in the industry, or saying, oh, we need to get flat-screen TVs in the country because they could be more energy efficient and it's going to be better for the country because we're going to save power and our energy bills are going to go down. No, it's just that, oh, I bought it because everyone else had one. They're in movies. My mate Dave in 1996, he was quite a well-to-do guy, so he could afford to pay, what, $7,000 or whatever the price was for flat screen TVs back in the 90s. But you can see when you look into your past and you see things and how things have evolved and how you've interacted with them and where we are now, you know that in 10 years' time, the world's going to be a different place. You know what I mean? You want to go back to, you know... how far do you want to go back? The 1700s, the 1800s, the Industrial Revolution, you know, my history, you know, if not for the Industrial Revolution, I would never have played rugby league, because then all those northern mill owners were trying to shove it to the posh guys down south and had to start their own game. There would have only been one sport called rugby. That's why I love history. And I say, I can go off tangent, but this is the world. And this is why, well, you better get involved in an EV, because there was a guy once upon a time who said, my dad had a horse. His great granddad had a horse. We've had horses throughout our generation. So I'm going to have a horse. What is that guy saying now? Where is he now? You know what I mean? You know, as they say, yeah. Poor people had horses. Rich people had cars. Now only rich people have horses. Poor people have cars. And you know how it's going to go with EV. And like Wayne Gretzky said, skate to where the puck is going. Don't skate to where the puck is. And that's where you've got to go. You've got to skate to the future. You know what I mean? Don't be saying, oh, VHS and Betamax. You know, shape the future. Be the force of good and shape the future. Don't wait for it to happen and then go, oh, that one won, which a lot of people have. No, it has. That's the argument you used to get. People say, I'm not doing anything. We're not putting the infrastructure in because the cars are not there. I'm not buying a car because the infrastructure's not there. It's like, you know where it's going. Why are we procrastinating and using reasons to finding reasons to not do something we've already agreed to do? It doesn't make sense. It's not logical.
Exactly, so, right. Paul, Martin,
do you get a question?
Right, so we've got a couple.
I get told off in meetings. I get kicked under the table sometimes at meetings because I love this. And this is the passion. This is what got me a statue outside Wembley. You know, when I say it to my kids, that's what it is. That's what makes you the third best, because you want to be number one. We can't get to 2030. So what? What about if we make it by 2032? If we make it by 2052, we're still winning.
Martin,
yeah, tell me off. too much.
Do you know what? Not too much. I love, I mean, gosh, if we could just bottle this energy, this passion, this focus, and it shows to Sam's point exactly why Connected Curb got you. But what I'm interested in, and I'm going to ask a sort of a not a technical question, but really I've got loads going on in my head, but
yeah,
the thing for me is, right, you've got a drive.
Yeah.
And you can charge your car on your drive. But you've aligned yourself to a company that are putting charge points on the curb and Wi-Fi and other bits and pieces. Talk me through that, because I mean, we've heard of the lamppost technology and all of these different technologies. Why have you kind of focused in on that? And I kind of know the answer, I think, but come on, tell me.
Because I had that realization, because I thought to myself, what would I do if I didn't have a drive? If I hadn't had a drive, would I have made that step at that time? I know, as I say, it is, you know, fear is a great, you know, inhibitor for us. You know, that's what causes the procrastination. We're waiting for the perfect solution. Mm. And I think to myself, and that's why in life, gratitude is the key. Gratitude is the key. I was so grateful for the fact that I had a driveway, and I thought to myself, what about all those people that don't have driveways? What about if I didn't have a driveway? Would I have still got one? I know there's a 22 kilowatt round the corner, but I think to myself, wow. And I put myself in that mindset. And I said, would I have actually done one? And I would have found it hard to answer yes. You know, it would, and I know it would have been a much braver decision, because it would have made life so much harder for me. Not saying I wouldn't have done it, but I would have realized how much harder it would have been for me. And that's why you've got to be so grateful. And that's why, you know, in life, you know, getting up in the morning and being healthy is the number one thing, isn't it? You know, without our health, you know, that's what we've got to be grateful for. And, you know, that's why you've got to tick off all the things. What am I grateful for? I'm great. And having a driveway was one of those things. And I said, what about the people who don't? So I'm thinking to myself, this company is doing things for people who don't have driveways. They're giving them the same ease and convenience. You've got that opportunity to charge outside your house. And we're going to be coming, obviously, in 2023 sometime with the agile tariffs. So that means you'll get the, you know, what I benefit from. That's those cheaper overnight tariffs. We've seen what's happened over Christmas with all these negative stories about queues at superchargers and Tesla. I'm saying that, you know, that's the mindset you start. I've given this a lot of thought, you know, over years. From the point of view as a consumer, as I'm sure I'm preaching to the choir here, these are things that you must have experienced yourselves. You know, I smile when I go past superchargers and they're all full, because for me it's like free money, because I've got a 2014 Tesla, you know, it's free supercharging, but I've got the charger overnight, so unless I'm going beyond the range of my vehicle, I don't need it. So if it's there, yeah, I'll take it. It's like giving me free money. Mm-hmm. It's like someone says, you, I'm going to give you a tenner, I'll take it if I'm walking past you, but I'm not going to travel 20 minutes to go or 30 minutes to go and get a tenner, am I? You know what I mean? But if it's there, exactly, I'll take it. So that's what it is, you know, and a lot of people have seen that earlier on, because, you know, we've seen a lot of free charging when, you know, in supermarket car parks, that's all going now. You know, people just, you know, you have to experience some of these things to have the emotional intelligence. And the only way you get the emotional intelligence is by experiencing things for an extended period. We see it in sport when they say, why they picked one player to play because of ahead of another, and they say, oh, because he's got experience. All that experience is emotional intelligence. He's been in those in those situations, he's felt the emotions, he's dealt with them, he's grown, he's a different human being. And that's why, you know, I've been in those experiences. And then you can have empathy for other people as well. That, you know what I mean? You think, I've got this, you know, like sometimes, you know, if you've got money, then that's why we give to charity, because you think, well, okay, I've got this, I've got some money, you know, I'm doing pretty well. These people are in need, you know, I'm at an MND lunch tomorrow for Rob Burrow, you know, connect to Kerber there. You know, you give back, don't you? You give back, whether that's in your knowledge, your, you know, your experience, your finances, of yourself, you're giving, you know what I mean? You're giving time, you know, to educate as well. That's another thing, is trying to educate people, to get them on board, to say, this is, I'm giving you something, which is, if you take it on board, it's going to be better for you. You know, I was up in Warrington, I'm not sure if you saw, last week at Warrington. It's through my rugby connections, you know, areas where I play. So you have that rapport, so you can give that, you know, and then you spread the word. And, you know, if you've got it on your street, what, you know, I'm thinking, if I didn't have a driveway, what would I want on my street? Genuinely, being authentic and real, asking yourself these questions. As I said, most answers you'll find, if you're being truly honest, because it's hard to lie to yourself if you're being honest, you think, what would I want? What would I want, you know? You know, if you give other people what you would give yourself, then that you can't have anything better than that. I'm thinking to myself, what would I want outside my house if I didn't have a driveway? I'd want enough chargers so I could charge up outside my house. I want them to be discreet. I want them to be working, you know, obviously efficiency rated, because that's the number one thing. You know, when you've been in an i3 and you've only got 100 miles, when I say 100 miles, 97 or maybe 89 on a very cold day in winter when it's frosty, when you're going up to that charger, what's your number one thought in your head? Not how fast it's going to charge. Working? Is it working? Is it working? So that's the thing. That should be your number one thing. Not what does it cost to put... You're not thinking, what did it cost the local authority to put this charger in there? What, you know, what's the commercials? Because I see in these meetings, and there's a lot of deals that break down. You know what? Oh, it didn't make sense on commercials. That's why we're in this predicament in the first place. Because people have thought, you know... Just give you another little story. Back in 1970s, when I was a young lad, okay? I'm not a scientist, and as I said... I'm not the smartest man in any room that I go in. But even back in the 70s, when I was less smart than I am now, when I was, I wasn't driving, but when I was in the car with my dad, driving behind one of these vehicles that's putting out black smoke out the back of his exhaust, we've all been there, I thought to myself, that can't be good. And I'm thinking, if I thought that in the 70s, why is it taken to 2023 for people far more intelligent than myself to work that out? Because people have been too emotionally invested in making money. And now we're thinking, oh, you know, taking Greta Thunberg or whatever, a certain level of consciousness out there for people to finally say, oh, we have to do something about this. And there's still people who don't think that climate is an issue, whatever, blah, blah, blah. But it's all about what you believe. It's about your emotions. And, it's emotional intelligence, feeling it.
Yeah. And you're talking about feelings there. And you know, listen, we've really received so much encouragement, motivation, energy, positivity. I'm guessing, just it's a wild guess, but you're a half glass full kind of guy. You think?
You have to be. That's the only way you could be successful.
Absolutely, I'm 100% with you. But there must have been times where the glass, even though it were half full, must have felt a bit cracked and a bit broken. There would have been times in your life. What is a time in your life when you really had to dig deep? And you know, just you as an individual.
Yeah.
Talk to me about it.
I'll give you two points. There's one in my EV journey and one in my sporting journey. And yes, that is all part of life, what you understand. It's got to be, you know, it is like anything else. It's like you go forward, you know, a couple of steps forward, then you go back. A couple of steps forward, then you go back. A couple of steps forward. Mm. But it's over time, you're further down the road than when you started. That's why you have to take that thing. Because if you stay too much in the moment, then you're too reactive, aren't you? You're like, oh yeah, everything's great. Oh, everything's shit. Oh, everything's great. You know, as some supporters of football clubs are, you know what I mean? When they're winning, they're happy. When they're losing, they're not happy. Rather than seeing where were we at the beginning of the season, where are we now? Where are we going to be next season? So in my rugby career, you know, things were going pretty well for me. You know, obviously I had setbacks. You know, I didn't get picked for England schools. I didn't get picked for the first Rugby Union World Cup in 87. So I went to switch to play rugby league because I thought, you know, it's not going to be another World Cup for another 4 years. And, you know, these guys are going to pay me a lot of money. Had some fantastic success at Widnes. Was the top try scorer for 4 years. Won certain accolades, loads of accolades. Won the Man of Steel in my first season in the game. You know, became Martin Charrett's Sophia. Saw it for the first time in print in a newspaper, and I thought, oh, that's probably me then.
Martin, is the truth. So sorry to interrupt, but
yeah,
there is a statement somewhere that says that the Swing Low Sweet Chariots was Swing Low Sweet Chariot was sung first in 1987 while you were playing in the Middlesex Sevens. Is that true?
That is true. The curator of the RFU Museum contacted me to let me know that they have found footage of that song being sung at Twickenham when I was playing in the Sevens in 1987. When people thought the first time it was sung was in 88 when Chris Otis scored a hat-trick for England against Ireland in 88. And people may not know, but the guy who's no longer with us, a guy called Colin Welland, who wrote the screenplay to Chariots of Fire, told me he was there that day and he used to tell me this story. And Colin went on to write the foreword for my autobiography in 1997. So that's how my relationship with, you know, the whole Chariots of Fire movie came along. It was just because he was there that day. He remembers singing it and he used to tell me that story. And I used to think it was an old, you know, folklore. You know, I didn't even know my name was Chariots or anything like that. It was only because in 1988 I saw it in the newspaper, and I've still got the newspaper. I've kept it. It was a picture of me in a Roman centurion outfit in the Daily Mirror. They couldn't stump up for a chariot, so I was in a wheelbarrow. You could go and see that picture. It's on my Instagram page, and it says Chariots at the top, and that's how I became Chariots of Fire. And I remember going to
What's amazing about that, Martin, is I was an amateur rugby player for 20 plus years, and all my mates went down the pub and we were screaming that song. And every time we went to Twickenham Stadium, we were singing out Chariots of Fire every single time, absolutely oblivious to where it came from or why we were singing it. It just was the right thing to do. So it's great.
It's funny how things start because you always
share a conversation with you about it.
Yeah, it's always funny how you think, how do things start? I'm not saying that they were singing it at me, but I was on the pitch when it was being sung. Colin Welland was in the stands that day. He wrote the film Chariots of Fire, and he also wrote the foreword to autobiography. That is history. You know what I mean? And it's there. Amazing. I have the photos. So that's sometimes in life.
Anyway,
you know, I think what's almost more extraordinary is 30 years later, it's still being sung at Twickenham. You know,
more incredible. When I go to watch that, I'm going to actually, because of my good friend Sean Edwards, who's now a coach of the coach of the French team. He's a defensive coach for the French team. He's invited me to the game. France are playing England at Twickenham, I think in March. And I'm going to the game, and sure as eggs, as soon as they start singing that song, people will turn and look at me in the crowd. And most people just think, oh, it's a coincidence, or it's this, or it's charity. But, you know, because I'm known as a rugby league player, it's so life is never straight roads. It's all about, you know, and to be in the history, you know, part of the history of the sport of rugby league, you know, with the statue at Wembley, you know, being attached to the... you know, to the song Swing Low. You actually had to be there, you know, your nickname's Chariots. Having that connection with Colin Welland, I'm actually going to do a talk at in Wigan on February the 10th at the DW, I think Robin Park, the arena next to the stadium. And Christy Welland, who's the son of Colin Welland, who is bringing the Oscar, you know, that Colin actually won when he famously stood up at the Oscars and said the British are coming. He's actually bringing that. So we're going to do a photo shoot with me. I've never been in the same room as that Oscar. So it's all about history. And I said, life is all about these stories and things and knowing your history. And, you know, that's what I bring, as I say. And when I get back to my original answer, which was...
Sorry, I interrupted.
Yeah, in 1993. Obviously, I'd signed for Wigan in 92 for a vast sum of money, $442,000, which is nothing in modern football transfers. But in 1992, for a rugby player, that was a lot of money. So obviously, that came with a lot of pressure on me. Had a fantastic year in 1992. Scored 10 tries in one game. Even when I tell my kids now that I scored 10 tries in one game without YouTube, they would not believe me unless they see it with their own eyes. Because even when I say it now, it sounds weird. What, one player scored 10 tries in one game? Doesn't make sense. But, you know, so much happened for me great in 92. Then in 93, I went to Australia, dislocated my shoulder, came back. There was a guy called Jason Robinson, who you may know, who's a good friend of Billy Wiz, a great friend of mine, who was just young at the time, just breaking into the team. There was another winger who we just signed, an all-black winger called Vainga Tugamala, God rest his soul, Inga the winger. So obviously 3-2 didn't go. I had a dislocated shoulder, wasn't particularly playing well. But my good pal, Sean Edwards, gave me a great bit of advice. And that's what I always say. It's about helping people. I'm so indebted to that guy. If that guy rings me now and asks me to do something, it's done. He knows that. That's the connection that we have. And that's why I say emotions and knowing stuff is so important. He knows he could ring me up at any day or any time of the day, night, and say, Martin, can you do this for me? And I'm going to do it for him. Because I remember back to that time in 1993 when I was at my lowest point. I'd been in Australia and, as I say, dislocated my shoulder at Penrith Stadium, playing for Eastern Suburbs. I was getting abused by these Aussie fans. It was a low point for me. I come back. Wigan were, you know, upset with me. They stopped paying me my wages. I was doing other jobs. That's when I was a model. I earned quite a lot of money for taking my clothes off. And actually, I'm not too embarrassed to say it, I appeared in a gay magazine with a ball in front of me. Because they offered me a lot of the things, they offered me a lot of money to do it. And I'm not too ashamed to say I did it. I needed the money. I did it. Things that you do. And I wasn't playing particularly well. I remember I had a particularly bad game against Huddersfield. No, I think it was Wakefield. Yeah, a guy called Henry Paul poked me in the eye and I missed a tackle. And the whole crowd, imagine that. That your own supporters are saying, get rid of you. That is a pretty, after being bought for so much money the year before, that's a pretty low time in a sportsman's career. And Sean Edwards got me to side. He said, you know what he said to me? He said, Martin, if it's not... Because I was trying to put on muscle because, you know, trying to do weights. I got away from what it is. You know, as you sometimes you get away from what it is that makes you successful. Keep the basics, keeping it simple. And he said, Martin, if it's not broken, don't fix it. And he says, run hard. Run hard. That was in his Northern accent. Run hard. Basically, you know what I mean? What he's saying is, stop thinking about yourself. Go back to basics and do it for other people. Do, you know, think about your teammates when you're there, not thinking about yourself. I'm going there running hard to help my teammates. And that's what I did at Wembley in 94. Anyone who wants to go and see, you know, lots of people have seen that try, you know, whether that's on reality TV, that try gets shown more because I'm on reality TV. I've done Strictly Come Dancing, Hunted, Total Wipeout, Come Down. So, you know, I've done probably more reality TV shows than I've played for rugby clubs. And, but, you know, that is about getting that for getting your name out there, connecting with people on their level. Mm. Reality TV mm-hmm. is something people connect with. More people applied for Love Island than applied to go to university last year. You know what I mean? So when I hear politicians, you know, you laugh, but when I hear politicians say things like, I don't know who, you know, when people say, oh, Jade Goody, I don't know who she is. That's you're not showing that you're intelligent. All you're showing is that you are disconnected with the general people. Because if the general population knows something, then you, as the governing body, you know, whether that's you know, you want to look at it from a royal family point of view, or you want to look at it from a government point of view, or you want to look at it from a local government point of view, you should know what is in the community. You should know what the population knows. So it's not, because some people say it as if, like, you know, you're trying to say, oh, yeah, I don't associate with that. No, you must communicate. Don't lose contact with the general public. Know what they then. Be able to communicate with them. Break it down. It doesn't mean that you are any less of anything. You know what I mean? So when he managed to communicate with me that and say that to me, it is because I knew Sean, I loved him. He's a very blunt and to a matter of fact person. But when he said that to me, that flicked a switch in me. And I said, you know, what is it that got me to this? You know, I've done so much great in the past. Just continue doing that. Continue doing what got you to the dance. Don't try and reinvent the wheel and do something different. Mm-hmm. Just do what it is that you're doing and work hard. And that's what I did. I just worked hard. I kept it simple. You know what I mean? I worked hard. And I remember on that day in 1994, imagine this. I wake up the morning of that game in 1994. You know, I've won the Lance Todd, which is the man of the match for that game 2 years ago. I think in 93, as I say, it wasn't a great year for me. To compound it, you know, what a good friend of mine who was playing for the opposition, because I was playing against my old team, Widnes, elbowed me. Imagine that. This is a person who I'd been in the trenches with, done so much with, a guy called Richie Dez. But because now I'm on the opposition, he elbowed me in the head, knocked me out, got sent off. First person ever to be sent off in a Challenge Cup final at Wembley. It took us about 20 years to reconcile our differences. So I had a history. But then I'm waking up to play, and now somebody writes a story about me. Imagine this. On the morning of the game, writes a story about me saying that I'm finished and I'm the best of a bad bunch and I was never anything. And this person who wrote this story, a guy called Alex Murphy, is one of the most revered players in the history of the sport. And ironically, he is on the statue with me at Wembley. Go figure that. So for the rest of eternity, we are stood. And that's why I keep things, because it's evidence. It's to communicate. Again, this story is on my Instagram feed. Anyone who wants to go and know anything about my life or about my EV journey, just go look at my Instagram feed. You see, it's all there, because you have to you know, document your history. It's almost like, you know, you want to have a soundtrack to your life in music. You want to document your history, anything you achieve. Imagine that if you had everything, you know, the day that you passed your driving test, the day that you graduated, the day that your kids, you know, you want that to be all documented. And a lot of it is now, but in the old days, it wasn't, because we didn't take pictures, you know, or video. No, not that you should be videoing your births of your kids, but imagine that, you know, there's lots of things that you think you wish you've had that. But if you want to have things to communicate to other people, that's what I think of my Instagram. That's why I chart my history, all the things that I do. And, you know, I woke up and I'm thinking, like, this guy should know better. You know what I mean? But what do I do? That's a negative, isn't it? I'll tell you this, right? Not many rugby players in the history of the sport have been on the back page of a red top newspaper. And that's for doing something good, right? So the only time it happened to me is because Alex Murphy is writing that I'm finished. And that was ahead on the morning. Someone brought me that paper. So I thought to myself, wow. I'm feeling the emotions now, how I felt that, because I'm all about emotional intelligence. And I'll tell you why that has come about. And that's a little bit later on. But I remember feeling some emotions in me that he'd written this. Obviously, it's going to be a motivator. I folded up that newspaper. I put it in my pocket. Imagine what I'd come through in 93, and Sean Edwards and Wigan wanted to get rid of me. And then I think I'm slowly getting things back. You know, Jason Robinson is one of the greatest players that ever played this game. He didn't get selected for that 94. So I'm thinking, and Jason didn't get, he went on in 95, you know, got into the team and he won the Lance Todd the year later. But in 94, he didn't get picked. He was still a youngster, didn't get picked. And I'm thinking, this is it for me now. And then that's, and they're writing this. And I'm in, you know, the, I'm on the back page of a Red Top Daily Mirror newspaper. I thought, wow, I'm on it. And then I go and do it. You know, I'm thinking about my team. I'm thinking, we have to win this game and I've got to do it. And the hardest thing in rugby league to do is to score a try in a big game with 80,000 people when they give you the ball under your own sticks and say, go. That's why it hasn't happened on many occasions anyway. You know, and to do it on that day with all that history, what I've been through, and I thought, wow, that was, and I'm thinking, I don't know what it is, but this is it. I don't know what it is, but this is it. And that's why I dropped him. Imagine that. So I dropped, it wasn't choreographed. I've never done that before. Never done it again since. Dropped to my knees, put my head in my hands, thought about my history, where I'd come from. You know, we haven't talked about so much of where I've come from at the beginning, from, you know, before I was 11, you know, how I was born, what I came into, what my parents came into this country, you know, as immigrants. Meeting each other outside a tube station. You know, imagine that before social media, being able, meeting somebody outside a tube station, find that you speak the same language as them, find that you from the same, you know, from the same town, you know, a couple of villages away, have me, you know, have my brother, send him back to a war-torn country because they didn't have childcare. Meeting my brother as a, you know, as a four-year-old, when he was seven, my brother couldn't speak English when he was 7 years old. He went on and passed his 11 plus. I, who'd been speaking English all my life, didn't pass my 11 plus. So when they're saying, oh, we can't do this, why wouldn't I be a glass half full person? You know, being, I wasn't the best rugby player in my family. Yet again, I'm the only person in my family who hasn't got a degree. My sister, even my nephews and my nieces all have degrees. My sister has a degree. My dad's a lawyer. My mum's a school teacher. But I always say to them, I'm the only one with an MBE. So you know what I mean? It's like, so why wouldn't you be a half class? You're on this planet, you're kicking, and people are saying, oh, well, we can't reach net zero. I think what I've come through and whatever, just even meeting my brother, you know, tells the story of how he was in a house. Imagine this, in Biafra, in a, living through a civil war in Africa, was in a house, and then 10 minutes later, his uncle came to get him. He went somewhere else. A bomb landed on that house. And I'm thinking, I owe him everything because he had such a great mindset. And my dad and the books that my dad wrote, Understanding Your Emotions, he wrote a book which is which was printed but never published. And I didn't realize that all that his thinking was seeping into me. Okay, and I always thought I achieved because of, you know, but I realized that you achieve anything because of, whether that's negative or positive, yeah? And I wake up on that morning, score that try, and I've got all these emotions going through me. I drop to my knees, put my head in my hands, and I say to myself, wow, wow. And I knew that I'd done something because I wanted to achieve a moment like that. Because I would say moments last forever. Careers can be lost. I can tell you about my stats. 501 tries doesn't mean anything because it's not emotionally. But if you're there that day and I do that, that's going to stick with you forever. You know what I mean? Because it's emotions. You've connected emotionally with that people. And that's all I'm trying to do is connect emotionally with people, take them on that journey, let them see what's possible, change them from glass half empty to glass half full, and think, while you're in the game, you're winning. And when, if you do something that needs to be celebrated, celebrate it. You know, at that moment, I celebrated it. I admit, 2 seconds later, I think Andy Farrell, who's now coach of the Irish team in the Six Nations, I think gave me a little clip and said, we haven't won this game yet. It's only 12 minutes in. But we were under so much pressure. Wigan were under so much pressure. And I think I'm stealing the lines of Ray French, who was the commentator that day. You know, and I just put in this run. Not, I wasn't doing it to score a try. I was just doing it because we're under pressure. We need to win this game. You know, doing for others. When you do for others, more comes to you. Because you know what they say? What goes around comes around. All these sayings are actually true. And I did it on that day. And then, you know, what? 15 years later, there's a statue of it outside Wembley. And when I get people to think about that, think about my journey and share that, then they go, oh, wow. these things are possible. We can get that infrastructure out there, because then they don't tell me about the commercials. They don't tell me about the other things that potentially go wrong. They think, this is great. You know, if we get enough of these things out there, it's like a snowball rolling downhill. As long as we get enough of these things out there, people can want them. You know, I want a charger out, you know, I'm thinking, what would I want outside my house? I actually want a charger that doesn't look like a charger. That's what I would want outside. I want something that's discreet, you know, as sustainable credentials, that's going to be in there for a long time. That's not going to be like, it's not going to be like what they're going to come again in 5 years' time, dig up my road and put something even, you know, great in. But I don't want something that is going to be put in my street then. In 10 years' time, there's a new bit of technology that I'd like to interact with, but I can't do because I've got the iPhone 3, which doesn't have all the newfangled things of an iPhone 17. You know, I think about internally, what do I want? And I think, give that to someone else. You know what I mean?
And so
that was what got me through. That's my low time, And I'd say in Connected Curb, my low time was in 2019, when we literally could not give a charger away. Imagine this, we've got a solution, great. I've got meetings, you know, I'm sending out emails. People are getting emails from, and I know this, because the first question I always ask in a meeting was, have you ever heard of Connected Curb, and what made you respond to this email? Because I'm thinking, it's data, isn't it? You want data. That's what we all want, data. So that's experience. And so when they say, I never heard of Connected Curb, and I was curious why Mark the Fire sent me an email about EV charging. It's just curious. And some of them say, well, I didn't know who you are, but I didn't know why somebody with an MBE was sending me an email about EV charging. But there's always a reason. And that reason I found was curiosity. We're all curious to find out more.
Yeah.
And that's what, and that comes from, you know, you've got to connect and get them curious to find out. Because if what you've got is great, it's like, it's curiosity, isn't it? It's like, you know, if I tell you, there's £1 million under a brick in Barcelona, and I'll give you the coordinates. You know, even if there is £1 million under that brick, you know, what's going to get you there? It's got to be a bit of curiosity. It's got to be an emotional connection. If you believe me, if you haven't heard me, there's reasons why you would do that. Even if it is there, even if the solution is good, great, it's still going to take a leap for you to get you there. And I understand these things from mindset, and I understand how my brain works, and I understand how other people's brains work. And so it's about connecting with people. It's not so much about having a great product that works, isn't it? It's about connecting on a human level with people and trying to be authentic and generally help them take their pains away. Because some people are brave, is it? Once upon a time, there are people who were... You went, you know what? I'm not sure what's around that corner, but I'm going to go and have a look. Some people are like, no, there could be a tiger around there, you know. But if everyone had that mindset, where would the world be now? So we have to have those of us who are brave, you know, like your good selves, and we'll, when the infrastructure's not there, go on. But some people aren't. And I must admit, during 2019, I felt to myself, God, what? Have I sunk, you know, a lot of my children's future, a lot of my future, a lot of myself into this because I believed in it and it wasn't getting the response. So what do you do? I go back to my experience and think, you just soldier on. That's why belief is so important, isn't it? We have to believe.
Yeah.
If we didn't believe, genuinely believe that EVs were better for the environment and better for everyone, we'd give up on it. We'd just sell it and go back a gas guzzler.
Exactly.
You know? The planet would probably be all right for our lifetime.
Yeah, and I think that's the thing. We've got to have that long-term view. And I'm, it's so exciting that you've brought so much energy and so much passion to your work with Connected Curb. It's no surprise that I'm here in Bedford and I've got some of your chargers, the Connected Curb chargers in Russell Park. And Warrington is now going with the Connected Curb chargers, of course, probably in your honour, I would imagine, almost entirely.
No, it's not due to me. So, no, I just want to say, always stay humble. That's one thing I've always learned. And in life, no matter how successful you are in life, you always stay humble. Because if you, you know, I think Gary Neville said it in his autobiography, which I read recently, and why he's a success. I mean, if you look at Gary Neville, you think, so if he's not the most athletic looking person, he's not, you know, the tallest of people, but he just worked hard. And that's what we always have to do is like, just because, you know, we've got two of the biggest deals, I think, with West Sussex and Surrey, two of the biggest contracts, you know, for public EV charging infrastructure, 20-year concession deals. But if you start to get arrogant, then you'll stop growing and stop learning, you know, no matter how great you are, it's constantly evolving. And, you know, as I say, that's what I bring. But I bring that authenticity and that experience.
You bring
and we're all going up. We're not, but it's like, it's trying to communicate that, but we're all unique.
Yeah.
Then we're all similar because we're all human beings. We all don't do things we should do. You know, if I say to people, think of something that you know you should do, but you're not doing, and think why you're doing that. And if you can answer that question, you're a better person already.
Yeah. And there we go. We want to be better people. Martin of Fire, you have helped us on that journey today without a shadow of a doubt. I mean, bringing the story of Connected Curb to life, but also your own personal passion and just the journey. I fear we've only scratched the surface. But it's been a real experience. I think we've learned so much, and we can all take away something from that. And for those of you that are interested, Martin's Instagram is Martin_chariots_of fire. So go and find him. You can fill in the gaps from the story today, and also check out the EV Cafe on the World Wide Web, but also LinkedIn and also Twitter and Instagram. We have had a fantastic day with Martin, Chariots of Fire, and learned so much. Martin, thank you so much for your energy and your passion, your candidness and your openness. It was characteristic in my little research that I did of you, just so open about your life and wanting other people to learn. It's been amazing to have you on.
My pleasure.
Thanks very much.
Thanks, everybody. And we look forward to catching up with you next time.